Page 477, The Method and Function of an Analytic Social Psychology, Notes on Psychoanalysis and Historical Materialism by Erich Fromm. The first in a series of manifesto-like statements on the merger of Marx and Freud, Fromm's 1932 essay lifted this debate out of the ideological realm and focused it on the possible cross-fertilization of the two regardless of their contemporary orthodox manifestation. To access the climate in which this attempt took place, one need only recall the bitter ouster of Wilhelm Reich from both the Communist Party and the International Psychoanalytic Association, the first having declared Pavlovian psychology to be the only one compatible with dialectical materialism, rejected what they understood as the bourgeois subjectivism of psychoanalysis. The latter objected to the deterministic, mechanistic, and leveling thrust of the official communist doctrine of the day. For unorthodox Marxists who could not accept the official simplistic doctrine of superstructures and consciousness being mere reflections of the base, whatever that meant, one central question remained open. What was the nature of the link between economic and cultural factors, especially in the problematic realm of class consciousness? The question became a central issue for members of the Institute. Page 478. Fromm, who joined the Institute in 1931 when they began to publish the Zeitschrift für Sozialforschung, began by suggesting that drives, far from being subjective, are active and passive adaptations to socio-economic situations. And as Freud himself had explained, these adaptations through the history of the individual, this history only needed to be extended to include the class background, the specific pressures, needs, possibilities which that class was experiencing as a social whole. Ironically, Fromm, who in his early stages had reflected or ignored Freud's meta-psychology, himself later joined Karen Horney, Harry Stack Sullivan, and others in what Adorno and Marcuse were to chide as Freudian revisionism, the assumption of non-contingent basic needs. Psychoanalysis is a materialistic psychology which should be classed among the natural sciences. It points to instinctual drives and needs as the motive force behind human behavior, these drives being produced by psychologically based instincts that are not directly observable in themselves. Psychoanalysis has shown that man's conscious psychic activity is only a relatively small sector of his psychic life, that many decisive impulses behind psychic behavior are unconscious. In particular, it has unmasked individual and collective ideologies as the expression of specific wishes and needs rooted in the instincts, and show that our moral and idealistic motives are in some measure the disguised and rationalized expression of instinctual drives. Quite in line with that popular division of instinct in those of hunger and love, Freud began by assuming that two groups, the instinct of self-preservation and the sexual instincts, footnote 1, text, served as the real motive force behind man's psychic life. He labeled the energy inherent in the sexual instincts as libido, and the psychic processes deriving from this energy as libidinous. Footnote 2, text. With respect to the sexual instincts, Freud extended the ordinary use of this term and included under it all the urges which, like the genital impulses, are physically conditioned, attached to certain erogenous zones of the body, and seek for pleasurable tension release. Freud assumes that the chief principle of psychic activity is the pleasure principle, that is, the urge to discharge instinctual tensions in a way that will bring the maximum amount of pleasure. This pleasure principle is modified by the reality principle. Taking reality into account may lead us to renounce or postpone pleasure in order to avoid a greater discomfort or to gain even greater pleasure at some future time. Page 479. Freud sees the specific instinctual structure of the individual conditioned by two factors, his inherited physical constitution and his life experiences, in particular the experiences of early childhood. Freud proceeds on the assumption that man's inherited constitution and life experiences form a complementary chain and that the specific task of analysis is to explore and uncover the influence of life experiences on the inherited instinctual constitution. Thus, the analytic method is exquisitely historical. It seeks to understand the drive structure through the understanding of life history. This method is valid for the psychic life of healthy people as well as for the sick and neurotic. What distinguishes the neurotic from the normal person is the fact that the latter has successfully adapted his instinctual structure to his real needs in life, while the former instinctual structure has run up against certain obstacles that hinder him from satisfactorily adapting it to reality. In order to make as clear as possible that sex instincts can be modified and adapted to reality, we must point out certain characteristics which clearly distinguish them from the instincts of self-preservation. For example, unlike the instincts for self-preservation, the sex instincts are postponable. The former are more imperative because if they are left unsatisfied too long, death will ensue. In short, prolonged postponement of their satisfaction is psychologically intolerable. This means that the instinct for self-preservation have primacy over the sex instincts. Not that they play a greater role in themselves, but in case of conflict, they are more urgent. In addition, the sex-rooted drives can be repressed while the desires emanating from the instincts for self-preservation cannot simply be removed from consciousness and placed in the unconscious. Another important distinction between the two groups of instinct is the fact that the sexual instinct can be sublimated. In other words, instead of being satisfied directly, a sexual wish can be satisfied in a way that may be far removed from the original sexual goal and blended with other ego accomplishments. The instincts for self-preservation are not capable of such sublimation. Furthermore, the drive toward self-preservation must be satisfied by real concrete means, while the sex drives can often be satisfied by pure fantasies. A man's hunger can only be satisfied by food. His desire to be loved, however, can be satisfied by fantasies about a good and loving God, and his sadistic tendencies can be satisfied by sadistic spectacles and fantasies. Page 480. A final important distinction is that the sex drives, unlike the drives toward self-preservation, can find expression in ways that are highly interchangeable and replaceable. If one instinctual drive is not satisfied, it can be replaced by others whose satisfaction is possible for either internal or external reasons. The interchangeability and replaceability of the sex drives is one of the keys to understanding both neurotic and healthy psychic life, and it is a cornerstone of the psychoanalytic theory. but it is also a social fact of the highest significance. It permits the masses to be offered and satisfied by those precise satisfaction that are socially available and desirable from the standpoint of the ruling classes. Footnote 3, text. Summing up, it can be said that the sexual instincts, which can be postponed, repressed, sublimated, and interchanged, are much more elastic and flexible than the instincts for self-preservation. The former lean on the latter and followed their lead. Footnote 4. Text. The greater flexibility and changeability of the sex instincts do not mean, however, that they can be left unsatisfied permanently. There is not only a physical but also a psychic minimum existence, and the sex instincts must be satisfied to some minimal extent. The differences between the two groups of drives, as we have noted them here, suggests rather than the sex instincts can make great adaptations to the real possibilities for satisfaction that exists, that is, to the concrete conditions of life. They grow and develop through this adaption, and only in neurotic individuals do we find disturbances in this capacity for adaption. Psychoanalysis has specifically pointed to the modifiability of the sex drives. It has taught us to understand the individual instinctual structures in terms of his life experiences, to see how the former has been influenced by the latter. The active and passive adaptation of the biological apparatus, the instincts to social reality, is the key conception of psychoanalysis, and every exploration into personal psychology proceeds from this conception. In the very beginning, and even later on, Freud concerned himself with the psychology of the individual. But once the instincts were discovered to be the motive force behind human behavior, and once the unconscious was seen as the source of man's ideologies and behavior patterns, it was inevitable that analytic authors would make an attempt to move from the problem of the individual to the problem of society, from individual to social psychology. They had to try to use the techniques of psychoanalysis to discover the hidden sources of the obviously irrational behavior patterns in societal life, in religion, custom, politics, and education. Page 481. This obviously meant that they would encounter difficulties that were avoided so long as they restricted themselves to the realm of individual psychology. But these difficulties do not alter the fact that the inquiry itself was a legitimate scientific consequence of the starting point of psychoanalysis. If instinctual life and the unconscious were the key to understanding human behavior, then psychoanalysis was also entitled and competent to say something about the motives underlying social behavior. For society, too, consists of living individuals who must be subject to the same psychological laws that psychoanalysis discovered in the individual. Thus, it seems erroneous if one, as Wilhelm Reich, for example, restricts psychoanalysis to the sphere of individual psychology and argues against its applicability of social phenomena, politics, class consciousness, and so on. Footnote 5, text. The fact that a phenomenon is studied in sociology certainly does not mean that it cannot be an object of psychoanalysis, no more than study of an object's physical characteristic rules out study of its chemical aspects. What is meant is simply that it is an object of psychoanalysis only and wholly insofar as psychic factors play a role in the phenomenon. The thesis that psychology only deals with the individual while sociology only deals with society is false. For just as psychology always deals with a socialized individual, so sociology always deals with a group of individuals whose psychic structure and mechanism must be taken into account. Later we will discuss the role that psychic factors play in societal phenomena and point to the function of analytical social psychology. The theory of society with which psychoanalysis seems to have both the great affinity and also the greatest differences is historical materialism. They seem to have the most points of contact because they both are materialistic sciences.